Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. We talk about television every week. We release it simultaneously worldwide. And your host is Mr. Tim Goodman, the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
I'm Jason Snell, by the way. I am the guy who pushes the buttons. Beep, boop. hey, big week this
pushing
week.
Pushing lots of buttons.
So many buttons.
No doubt about that.
Huge week. This is the week where it leaks or is released about like what's going to get renewed and what's going to get canceled. So
yes.
It's like life and death week this week
for network television.
For the networks, yes, for the big network stuff.
So basically, swap meet news.
Yeah, exactly right. Welcome to the penny saver.
Oh, that was mean.
That was
came
tough.
Out a little meaner than I thought it was going to come out.
Yeah, and you mm-hmm. should expect mean, but that was even for you. That was brutal. That was why yes. you have to lash out like that.
Yeah, why do you hate?
Before we get to that, you have two pieces this week that I wanted to mention. Both kind of thoughtful. I mean, you're like you said, it's sort of like quieter than usual in some ways in terms of mm-hmm. like new shows premiering. We're in this like dip while shows are like network shows are doing their finales and all that, and the summer programming is coming, but it's sort of not here yet. But you did write a couple pieces that I thought were really interesting. One is about the Americans, and it's essentially, you know how in the trades, including The Hollywood Reporter, people will take out ads, like studios will take out ads saying, for your consideration, for like the Oscars or the Emmys. This was like your editorial for your consideration piece for the Americans to be lavished with Emmys.
Yes, because, I've been wanting to write this for a little bit, but so, and then time finally freed up so that we could do it. And, you know, it was... A, it needs to be done, and I think that, you know, there's at least been some history. I've got feedback from people who are in the Television Academy, let's just say help make it work, that they have listened in the past. For example, I came out in The Hollywood Reporter and told them that they needed to expand their categories. It was a simple fix. They should... you know, do it to 10. They didn't do it to 10, but they got up to 6 and 7. And it was a big move on their part. So I was happy to see that. And, you know, even if they don't listen, I thought it was just time, because I think there was an important thing to make here. I think there's a sense, if you go back historically and look at best dramas that they overlook, they tend not to come back to that. And I don't know if it's like they just continue to be ignorant, or they're just thinking, you know, we kind of missed the boat on that. Let's just keep going. So I wanted to come out and say, no, this is a great time to come back and make amends, because there's two seasons left. There's this one, and this next one could be one after that. But this is the best season of The Americans, so it absolutely has to be acknowledged with a nomination. And I framed it in a way that I think makes sense to them, which is, this is your chance to reclaim whatever relevance the Emmys have, because the Golden Globes had spent the last 4 or 5 years trying to be the Emmys, and they were capitalizing on all the Emmy blunders and the nominations, and how they would overlook things and they would rubber stamp them. And so they were really, I gotta say it, they were on their ass. So go ahead and check that box, because they were just like really taking the Emmys to task, and the Emmys were falling down on the job. And every time they overlooked, even though they're making better picks as they in the last 4 or 5 years, every time that they would miss something big, it was, you know, the newcomers and streaming services were first acknowledged by the Globe. So, but this year the Globes became the Globes again. Oh, they were insane. I mean, Lady Gaga and Mozart in the Jungle and all this stuff. And then they clearly were pandering to all the streaming services, which is great. It's like, let us be the first one to you know, give some props to Casual or all these other shows. And let's help save, you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and the CW. It was great. That's what they should be doing. But as far as like, you know, the Emmys, it's now their chance. Once the Globes became the Globes and imploded and got silly again, this is their chance. And the only way you can take advantage of this chance is not blow the biggest category of the Emmys, which is best drama, and overlook the best show on television. So I was like, dude, this is your chance. The first one's already in the books. The Globes is already a disaster. Now this is the one thing you have to do and nominate the Americans. So I hope they do it.
Yeah, this is, do you think, I mean, I feel like your hands are clean now. You've said what you needed to say, but do you think it, a piece like this can have an effect on the voters, or is it just sort of more about you wanting to be on the record as saying this is how it should be?
I think that is kind of the unique position that THR is in. Yeah, I think it can have an effect. I think the thing that's happened since I came over there 5 years ago from the Chronicle is that, you know, you're much more industry read, and it's much more of a, and the trades are not like they used to be. Even Variety is so much better now and less sort of like giving in to the demands of the networks. And certainly THR sort of led that. And that's partly why I was hired. I was not going to be a person who was going to be going to all the parties and like just yesing everything they did down there. I was going to be Janice's way to keep in check some of the stuff that was, keep it, you know, at least have us a little bit more serious, be taken more serious and, you know, bring in sort of like a tougher critic and certainly somebody who liked to write about the industry. So yeah, I think it does. I mean, like I said, I got feedback from them. Are people in the industry, are people who were in the academy saying, yeah, we totally read the whole thing about like expand the categories. It's not like they had never heard that before, but it sort of gave them this a way to say, look, this is what we've all been pushing for to the people who didn't want to do it. And I think they were holding that up as like, hey, look, everybody notices this guy's pushing for it. THR's pushing for it. So let's why not? Hmm. And they did it. So maybe they'll do it this time. Again, like you said, my hands are clean. I had to say what I had to say, but I honestly think that they're going to do it, whether it has anything to do with me or not. I think that you can't overlook the Americans this year. And though they have a history of kind of blundering their way through, I just think that they've been on an uptick, making better decisions recently. And, you know, they've made some changes to the rules that have helped that. And I think now's the time. I would be, of course, extremely disappointed if they don't fix it, because this is, like I said in the piece, this is your chance. This is the one thing you have to do. I mean, technically, not technically, but theoretically, they could not nominate the two lead actors and it would still be a snub. But if they at least nominated the show, they would have made some gains here. But overlooking the show entirely is a mistake.
The other piece was about Louis C.K., who made some news.
He did.
By on a podcast saying mm-hmm. that he cannot envision Louis in its existing, you know, form that we've come to know it on FX coming back.
Yeah, it was really kind of fascinating. It was Scott Feinberg's awards chatter podcast on THR, and it posted on a Saturday. And as you and I know, no one reads anything on a Saturday.
No, or listens to podcasts on Saturdays. That's why Friday is the day to release a podcast. Everybody knows that.
Everybody worldwide knows that. So it was kind of a stunner. It dropped on a Saturday. And he had two important pieces of news in there that hadn't been out before. One was this very thing that he's just said, I don't have any more stories for that guy. And though they didn't put to, you know, he left the door open saying, you know, I might come back to this. The door's always open at FX for me to come back and tell these stories, because it's not, you know, it's about a guy. It's autobiographical. So when he's going through different things, you know, maybe the next piece of the series, he won't even have the kids in it or something like that. He, you know, and John Landgraf from FX said he could come back 5 years from now. So,
right.
But the thing that struck me was that he's not going to come back anytime soon. I mean, you read that or listened to the podcast. He has so much going on. Horace and Pete, he wants to do a Broadway show, whether it's Horace and Pete or something else. He wants to write movies. He wants to try different. He wants to upset the delivery system even more, whether that's through movies or whatever. And he's successfully pulled off some really amazing creative stuff. So he's really feeling it. He's really feeling his creativity. He's in a great period right now in his life. So that was part of the news. The other thing that he said was that Horace and Pete is not over, that there likely will be a second season. And there, if it's not a second season following this one directly, it's because there will be a Broadway play. And there might be a movie. And that it's just kind of amazing. It's full of possibilities for him. And I wanted to sort of celebrate how awesome that is to see a guy who rolled the dice on his own creativity with his own money and nailed it. But at the same time, we lose after five seasons, which is one of television's greatest series in Louis. We're not going to see it as it currently exists. So that was sad.
Well, I mean, I think that's a really good point that he, first off, that he doesn't need to grind away and find more stories in the world of Louis because he's got all these other things going on. He has so many opportunities to try some new stuff rather than just going back to the well when he feels that it's exhausted. But I'm reminded a little bit of Jerry Seinfeld. You know, the premise of Seinfeld was similar to Louis, that there's this guy who is a, you know, he's a stand-up comedian and then he lives his life. And Seinfeld, the show, became such a huge hit that they took, you know, a couple of steps in that direction with the idea that they were going to make a show based on Jerry Seinfeld's life and all that, and toyed with talking about stardom a little bit. But I think, you know, Louis is so autobiographical in so many ways that, you know, he's not that guy anymore, right? So why would he go back and try to invent stories about who he used to be when he's a different guy now? And I'm sure that he's so introspective, right, that I'm sure he's going to have autobiographical material. And I would almost put money down that there will be a version of Louis that will be, you know, about who he is now instead down the road at some point. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he sort of run out of things to say about that part of his life, because he seems to have moved past that part of his life now.
Yeah, and I thought I added the bit from from TCA, which is great that we have these transcripts and we can go back, because I remember him talking about it, John Landgraf, and there's, you know, that guy's superstar, so everything he says is gold. But that bit in there where he just said, look, it's just a little paragraph, but he said, look, I told him he can be Louis in his 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and God hope willing his 80s. Mm. He can always come back and do this show. And, you know, even if Landgraf moves on, there is so much DNA that Landgraf's put into FX that Nick Grad and the guys that are coming up behind him to take it over are going to, you know, keep up his wishes. They're different, but they're going to keep up his wishes. And I think the door would always be open at FX, even if Landgraf wasn't there, for Louis C.K. to do that. And that's kind of amazing. I think he would like that challenge. You know, it sounds goofy. They're like, yeah, he can make a show till his 80s for us. I think Louis C.K. in his like 50s and 60s would love to come back into, you know, 10 episodes about what he's doing then. Right. That'd be super creative if he could do it. But the column that I wrote was like, yeah, it kind of sucks. I loved Louis. But you look at what he's doing now and you think, God, how great must that feel as a creative person to be really hitting it on all cylinders and to have so much opportunity? It's like Hamilton, you know, it's like that guy is like running the world right now. And so in some ways, Louis C.K. is doing the same thing because he took Horace and Pete hasn't even like birthed yet into the greater world. It's going to end up worldwide. It's going to be in different formats. It's going to end up being on one of these streaming services. It could even come back to FX. It could be a movie. It could be a play. It could be a second season. And then beyond that, he's already working with Woody Allen. He's thinking about others of his own movies. He's probably thinking about he's executive producing like three other TV shows. The dude is on fire right now. So I, you know, like I said, you you reiterated, why would you go back and make up stories on a life you're no longer living?
Right. So it'll be interesting to see what he does next. He's a super, super creative guy and restless, right? So he's always looking for another thing to do. So
yeah.
Hey, Tim, let's take a break. We have a sponsor because we're that good. We're that awesome. Our listeners are that awesome, actually.
They are.
That people want to sponsor this podcast to reach them. It's our friends at Harry's again.
Woohoo!
We talked about before. Going to rub my cheek now just to remind myself of what a good job Harry's does at shaving my face. And buying razors is a pain. Drugstores have them locked away behind the plastic dome, and you have to find some pimply teen to unlock the thing.
Oh, pimply teen!
Pimply teen, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. I can get the key. My manager has to unlock that. and they're expensive, and they come in bad packaging and all that. Plus, I don't want to talk to the pimply teen ever.
No,
I want to go on
no.
the internet and order things and have them shipped directly to my door.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's makes that possible. They've got a great website. It's very easy to use. They make their own razors. They bought their own factory in which to make their razors. You cut out the middleman, so the prices are great. It's about half the price of the leading brands. The quality is high, and you don't have to deal with the pimply teen who has to go get the manager to unlock the cabinet. So I've been using them for more than a year. I really, really like the shave of the razor. I really like the lotion. It's got a little faint minty smell. It's very nice. It's got like, it's like a five blade thing. So it's like super efficient. I was always skeptical about like stacking the blades on there, but it really works. So that I don't have to do a lot of work and my face comes out nice and smooth and shaved. The quality is guaranteed. If you're not happy, you will get your money back. There's a full refund if you're not satisfied with the stuff. And, they've got a great starter set for $15. You get a razor, three blades, and either the shave cream, which I like, or the foaming shave gel. You can get that too. That one foams up, but I like the shave cream.
I like the shave cream, and I will just insert this quickly.
Yes, please.
I just ordered.
You just ordered some.
I just ordered. Yeah, it's in fact, it is arriving today.
Look at that,
the day of this podcast.
And you didn't have to talk to a pimply teen.
I did not. And in fact, their website's very easy, and it's arriving today. Yay!
How about that? So you be like Tim, is what I'm saying, and get $5 off your first purchase by using the code TV Talk. And that means you get a whole month worth of shaving for $10 because it's a $15 starter kit and you'll get $5 off. So thank you to Harry's for exciting Tim because he's going to get a box.
I am.
And it's going to have shaving stuff in it. And for sponsoring the TV Talk Machine, TV Talk is the promo code. Go to harrys.com, HARRYS.com. At checkout, you will enter that code TV Talk. You'll get 5% off. You will get the fantastic starter set. So, stop compromising. Give Harry's a try. Thanks, Harry's.
Yay.
All right, should we talk about the life and death of TV shows now?
Let's do that.
So our friend Indy Sarah sent a tweet out saying, I just know the TVTM tonight is going to go into the massive cancellations, and I can't wait. Is this how Mr. Burns feels? Excellent.
Wow. The dark side of little sweet Indy Sarah. She's rubbing her hands together. Oh, let's talk about death.
Let's talk about the cancellation. Should we start with what died or
yes.
Let's start with what died. Okay. So Castle. I'm not going to list all of them because there are a lot of them, but like some notable ones that I wanted to throw out and see what you think. Castle died. This is a show with Nathan Fillion that I get the sense, you know, he was sort of, hey, it's nice that guy had a show that lasted longer than a season for once. But at the same time, it lasted for so long. And they were going to get rid of the female lead in the show.
He and she were not getting along. So
the fans started this cancel Castle movement, which made me laugh. But when I heard that Castle got canceled, I was like, all right, fans, you got what you wanted. They're not going to bring it back without one of the leads. And Nathan Fillion tweeted today, I think, like, hey, everyone, I'm available. You know? So maybe he's got some TV money banked away now. Maybe.
Yeah, he's free.
Go do something else that is not a gentle mystery show.
Yes, exactly. Do something better.
Marvel. Interesting. The influence of Marvel inside ABC, especially with the change in leadership there. Interesting to see. So Agent Carter got canceled. Mm-hmm. Although Hayley Atwell's other drama got picked up that she was in first position for. So they definitely wanted Hayley Atwell on that other show. Set in the modern day, you know, apparently she's doing an American accent. I'm not quite positive about that one, but
That's always troubling.
And Marvel's Most Wanted, the spinoff that they were trying to spin out of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Tyra from Friday Night Lights, did not get picked up either. So they're renewing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they're kind of not expanding the Marvel business at ABC, which I think is just an interesting change for them over, you know, what they've been talking about the last year.
Yeah, I think that bears watching. I honestly do. I think that's I would imagine that if you're a Marvel person and you don't usually get no very often, that to get a couple, you get a rejection and a no, you kind of maybe question, is this where you want to set up shop going into the future? So
I know that ABC is Disney, and so they're all corporate buddies, but at the same time, I mean, I was talking to somebody today about it, and I said, I don't think Marvel Comics is a really good fit for ABC's brand. I mean, I think it's kind of a weird fit anyway. They're very successful with Netflix. They've got, I think they've got five shows now that they're working on with Netflix. So maybe Netflix is the better partner. I don't know whether, you know, they would consider some other partner, given that their competition has done a very good job of generating shows on the CW. Yes. Which we'll get to.
We sure will.
But, you know, yeah, the Marvel, you know, maybe Netflix is the answer. Maybe there's some other broadcast answer now. I mean, DC's got CW shows, had a CBS show this last year. It's got a Fox show. So it'll be interesting to see what Marvel might do if the answer at ABC is no.
I think that you're right. I think Netflix is the spot for them. I think they can be more adult about it. Yeah. I think they can, you know, Jessica Jones sort of proved that, and Daredevil as well. And so I think that that's a good spot for them. And you don't have to, like, there is no identity at Netflix other than it's a streamer and they stream a bunch of shows.
Right.
And whereas at ABC, it's very much a female skewing network that is strong on soap elements. So that's a struggle for superhero shows.
Yeah. Nashville got canceled.
It took a lot longer than I thought. I will say that. But
the last twang of the banjo is fading away.
Yes, that frees up Connie Britton.
Yeah, it does.
Yay!
It does. Mrs. Coach can go do something else and take some TV money that she got. They were going to bring in the 30-something producers as showrunners next year, apparently. They were warming up in the bullpen, Zwick and Herskovitz, and then they're like, nope, wave it off. Mm-mm, nope, we don't need you.
I would love to see her in something else. I mean, she's done so much good work on the FX series. Like, just give her. I want her to be on cable.
Yeah.
That's where I want her to be.
Yeah. More Connie Britton, please.
You know, and I'm not like a huge Nathan Fillion fan, but I want him on cable, too.
Yeah, I agree. He's so likable that, mm-hmm. you know, just, yeah, he's quite honestly, I was going to say, I think he could also be hold down a CBS procedural or something
sure
like that, but mm-hmm. I don't think I want to wish that on him because I get the sense that like Castle has been comfortable for him. And obviously, you know, you're on a show that long, you're going to make money with it, but that it seemed like a waste of his time after a while. Like, you know, do something more interesting than that. Now you did that for 7 years. It's fine, Castle fans. It's fine, but it's a long running show.
It is a really long time. And it's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
And you talk to anybody who does those, who is the least bit ambitious, and the first thing they'll tell you is like, oh, the money's great, but I got to tell you, the shooting is not fun, and I want it out of the contract. So
yeah, and they, you know, they sign these deals that I guess if you're really unhappy, you can get out of, although you risk your reputation. But it's like, you know, they keep renewing it. It's kind of hard to say no, and contractually, you may not be able to say no, and then you're just kind of trapped. It's a, you know, it's a velvet coffin, but still,
yeah, you're locked in for 5 years, and then they kind of make it really hard for you not to do that because they have so much. They give you so much money. It's hard to say no,
and the people that you're working with are going to have to find new jobs if you say no, and. Anyway, the free agency, that's the upside of a show dying. Gallivant, which was another bizarre ABC experiment they put in the ground. It's kind of I saw a nice tweet today that said it was from Javier Grillo Marswatch, who created The Middleman, saying, don't be sad if your favorite show got canceled. It's amazing that be happy it lived at all, because most of them don't. And Gallivant's a good example. Like, how did that show do 2 seasons at any point on a network at all?
Yeah. It is kind of stunning.
It's baffling to me, but obviously the champion at ABC is gone. The Muppets as well. Muppets, they took a swing and a miss the first time out.
Boy.
They sort of righted the ship with the last few episodes, but they'd bled away their entire audience. So I saw a couple of the new ones and I thought they were better, but it was like I just lost my appetite to watch that show anymore. So it's dead.
Yeah. If the thing is, I got to tell you, I think they made a mistake not trying to make it new from the beginning, and that was what everybody said, and that was the critique. It was like, ooh, this is not really the Muppets. And you look back now and you think, what a complete slam dunk. How do you mess up the Muppets?
I know.
I mean, really, how do you mess the Muppets up?
Yeah.
So,
they did figure out their mistake, but it was too late.
It was too late. And the bad thing about it is that it kind of sucks for the Muppets, which could be a good family series, and it could be funny, and it could be... It could run a long time. You're not going to get another shot for a while. So kind of mothball those Muppets for a while.
Yeah, it's not good. Maybe that's good news for the Muppets because, you know, Sam the Eagle, I want to see him on cable. So,
right.
That's a callback. Anyway, hey, what's the deal with Fox? So Fox had a couple of comedies that were seemingly going, you know, okay. Fox and comedies, you know, it's kind of a problem.
Uh-huh.
The Grinder, Grandfathered, and they're both gone.
Yeah, that's, I don't know about that. That is, it's funny because I am so rooted in, outside of network. I mean, basically any network show that I'm watching now, as like I told you before, we've talked about it, is basically for like kind of mindless pleasure and they're fun and I don't have to think about it. Or they're like top-notch comedies. And I don't know why they didn't nurture those shows more. They didn't do great, but at the same time, they got good reviews and they had an audience. I don't think they matched each other so much together. There's some dubious goings on over at Fox. Yeah. It would be interesting to see how their, you know, how their season ends up playing out. I mean, like, what's the last thing we talked about was like Houdini and Doyle, which was their bridge to the summer, although it came too early. And you and I were like, May? Really? So, I'm curious as to what's going on over there.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people who were shocked by The Grindr, especially, which seemed to have people seemed to really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And think that it was interesting and different, and that perhaps that was something they should have stuck with. But I don't know.
Yeah, I look at that, and I think that's tough. I mean, those were not my favorite shows. The Grindr was good. I like that, but I think that I look at these things and I think, well, you know, Blackish and Fresh Off the Boat are still going strong, so that's good to me. I like that. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is not canceled, so
that's good.
I'm happy about that. So you just kind of count your blessings on the network side, because I don't, again, they don't normally know what they're doing. And over at Fox, I'm really interested to see what they're doing, because boy, if you can't empire forever. I mean, it came back strong, but that you got to have something other than that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But ABC renewed The Catch. What the hell?
I don't know. I don't know. I've got some very mysterious renewals too, but I there's one more cancellation I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Pour one out. The torso is no longer going to be isolated. CSI Cyber is no longer, which I believe ends the CSI franchise for now.
For now. As soon as I saw the news, I had to tweet it out to you as well, mm-hmm. saying it's not a thing.
It's not. It's still not a thing, and now it's not a show about not a thing. Fortunately, Scorpion will be back.
Scorpion's there to tell us what's not a thing. But so, I mean, the score, yeah. At least in the score, I mean, they're not going to start a fire through the internet. They're not going to do it.
Somebody said, I think it might have been Alan Sepinwall, had the jibe, which again, it's so mean and yet it's so true, which is CSI Cyber will no longer be scaring your grandparents about what computers can do. Oh, that was not good. Hey, so American Crime got renewed, which is amazing because that is a prestige show, an ABC, right? So it's a prestige show that doesn't get great ratings, although, you know, the it's definitely something that people like who've seen it. But I was a little surprised by that. Were you?
I was not, because I think they need to be attached to that project. Mm. I think it has Emmy consideration. It has a lot of things going for them. It's the prestige angle. It's created by African-American man. It's got a multi-ethnic cast to it. It's everything that ABC is trying to be. It's just not doing great. But I think you can offset that by, I think a network, there's a duty to a network, I think, to keep one or two of those shows. And so to me, I wasn't surprised by that. Although with the new people in charge, you didn't know right. What was going to happen.
It's an anthology. I don't know if that makes a difference. I guess you could, there's less fear that people are going to, you could get people jumping on with a third season because it really is an anthology show.
Yeah, you can change it and that's a bonus, and I think more shows are going to do that going forward. I think the bigger surprise there for me was the keeping of The Catch, but then probably not a surprise because it's a Shondaland production,
right?
So then it's like wink,
actually,
wink.
I read that is it Scandal has a reduced order because of pregnancy, and so that the theory was that maybe The Catch got renewed because they wanted some other Shondaland to kind of patch in the gaps where they weren't going to be able to do Scandal.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory too. I saw that and I thought, well, it certainly, there's been weirder things that have happened. And you could, you know, it doesn't mean you can't get rid of it. But she also got another show on the docket. So, yeah, I mean, somebody passed on, I think it was ABC passed on her comedy. So she still hasn't launched a comedy, but, well, an intentional comedy, because The Catch is really funny, I think. But for the wrong reasons. So yeah, it's like, the TV news is funny. I was watching that, and of course THR is all over it. And every time, Leslie Goldberg, who's our most dogged reporter on these things, and we have a lot of people on it. But every time she tweets something out, I'm like, oh boy, network television.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you network guys, you're so clueless. You know, it's like with Wayward Pines. Yes, it's definitely closed ended. It is just a summer experiment. It's back, and we can open up new forms of storytelling. Oh my god!
so we heard from our friend Sam in the 601, and I'm bringing this up to this point in the show because you may remember Sam in the 601. He's the one who wrote in with his pitches for other Chicago shows that NBC could do, like Chicago Clean, Chicago News, Chicago Politics, and Chicago Mortuary. His note into us was, damn it, how did I not have Chicago Justice on my list? Because Chicago Justice was announced as a new series from Dick Wolf, where he's adding another thing to the end of Chicago and making
That's
a show
five.
Of it.
That's five.
Amazing.
It's crazy time. Yeah, I repeated my refrain of Chicago Corner Grocery and Chicago yep. Hot House Yoga. A little disappointed. But you know what? Keep your suggestions coming. He's mm-hmm. not stopping.
He's not. No. No.
There Dick is Wolf, no stopping him.
Dick Wolf can't be stopped.
There's only one, and I'll let you guess what it is. There's only one thing that stops the production of a Dick Wolf show. Do you know what it is?
No.
Lack of money. If the money's not
there, you walk away.
He's gone. Yeah. It's not printing money for him. He will say, we're done with this one.
Amazing.
I will create another one. That's what he'll say.
So the resolution of our question from about a year ago, which is why is Supergirl on CBS and not the CW, was answered this week when CBS announced that CW would be airing the second season of Supergirl instead of CBS. So I guess experiment was fun, but now it's time to move on because it was not a good fit for CBS's standards and audience, I guess.
Yeah, the weird thing about that, it was its highest ranked freshman show, which when you get rid of it, you're basically saying, okay, all of our other freshman show are not good either.
Right.
So you're basically saying you had a bad development year, and they don't do many shows because everything else is a hit. But that's kind of a shocker. Whether Supergirl moving is not a shocker to you and I. I mean, they've already, you know, they once they got the deal in place with Calista Flockhart saying she would actually go to Vancouver, then it was probably a no-brainer.
I suspect that was what was holding up the announcement was yeah. that they had to get her, they wanted to get her to agree to shoot in Vancouver.
Yeah, because she steadfastly said she wouldn't, which means I think she steadfastly padded part of her bank account, even though the whole other production part of it is being drastically reduced. They're shooting it in Vancouver, and it's just not going to be as expensive.
Or sunny,
yeah, and it'll be more dour.
National City was a very sunny location, and that's harder to do in Vancouver. I also wonder if there were some concessions that Calista Flockhart got, where they're going to, you know, set up her schedule so that she can reduce the amount of time she has to be in Vancouver and fly up for a set number of days and shoot maybe a couple of episodes. And then I wonder how you sweeten that deal, money or you prioritize her in the schedule to try and get her to not have to be in Canada. Cause who wants to spend extra time in Canada?
I do. I actually love Vancouver.
I love Vancouver too. That's the thing. So I don't know.
But yeah, you're right.
She lives in LA. Her family's in LA.
She might not have got a lot of extra money, or if any, but you're probably right. I mean, they can do that now. I mean, look at it. Like, if you organize it well, it's all about logistics. I mean, the second season of Mr. Robot, they're shooting it all at the same time, and it's all being done.
Yeah, like a movie.
I've been by Sam Esmail, and it's insane to do it that way.
And they're not going to do Supergirl that way, but I mean, all of Calista Flockhart scenes, almost all of them are on one set. So, you know, if you rolled a couple episodes together and had her shoot all of her stuff, I feel like that might be if I were a producer, that would be the thing I would try is like, can we have you come if we get you back home? You know,
yeah.
You're only up for a couple days a week or whatever it is.
Come up and shoot your batch because it can be done. You have to work ahead.
Yeah.
And that's probably what in the crunch time people were saying to the producers, and they're like, yeah, okay, we'll do it. And it's like, you know what? no more shooting this like it is. You got to have like three or four of these in advance so that Calista can come up, shoot all of her stuff in one day or 2 days, and then go back.
Yeah, even if it was just two episodes back to back, where you're like, look, every 2 weeks you come up for 4 days and you got the rest of your time to yourself. And I don't know, but anyway, it's on the CW. So CW, presumably, I don't know whether they'll keep it on Monday night or what, but they could potentially have four straight nights with DC Comics superhero shows, which is kind of funny. And I have to ask you the other question here, which is, CW is going so well right now that they're kind of running out of room to put shows.
Who would have ever thought we would have got there?
I know.
And especially because they don't program 22 hours, you know?
That's what I was going to say is, at some point, did they start programming year-round or something, or push into the edges of the summer, or reduce their rerun schedule or something, because they don't have enough slots for the shows that they've got?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, and you're hitting on that, is I don't know whether it benefits them to blow it up on a, you know, on their weekdays or conflict that thing, because that's going to push them into, like, God forbid, canceling one of their shows that's been on for 17 years.
Supernatural.
Right. But it's done well for them, so you can't. But they are, I think they're in a unique position because they don't get great ratings for anything, to test out the summer, especially for genre stuff. Because
didn't the 100 start out in the summer?
I don't know.
Maybe not.
But and the 100 has a super loyal audience. If that was in the summer, they would watch it. I'm not sure they'd be happy about it, but they would watch it. And, you know, they get a lot of time shifted stuff anyway.
It started in March. I'm remembering that wrong.
So,
yeah, it's a lot of time shifted stuff. Would they cut episode orders? Would that be a possibility?
No, I don't think that's going to benefit them, because I think they'd sell it. They sell the shows
internationally,
and that's where they make their money. So the shows are actually the cash. But I think if they could. I mean, they're an interesting case study. If they did go into the summer, I think that they would take less of a hit, and they haven't tried it really yet, but I think it would try less of a hit on their fall shows if they were in the summer, because they're not super well watched anyway. And, like, how much of a drop could it be? And then it would all depend on, like, what their Live Plus 3 ratings would be. Hmm. I guess that would be what to look for.
Well, it's a good problem to have, right? We have so many successful shows that we don't even know where to put them all. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's great that, like, what's kind of fun. I mean, it was pretty obvious that it should have been on there anyway. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I will say that who was it? Was it Joe? I think it was Joe who said that he said, "Oh, it's probably not true. I wonder if this could be something that CBS knew all along was only keep for one season, and it got this gigantic network sampling, and then we're going to move it over." And I was like, "Wow, that's really thinking way ahead."
Seems a little too conspiracy theory for me, but I did see somebody say that the idea, sort of like what they talked about doing with the Star Trek All Access show, where they're going to premiere it on CBS and then run it on CBS All Access. Like, do you use CBS to launch things and get an audience, and then they'll follow the show somewhere else? It'll be interesting to see what happens to Supergirl's ratings, because Supergirl's ratings on CBS, if they translate at all to the CW, would be a huge hit for the CW.
Oh yeah, I mean they'll take that. I mean, I think that it didn't do well for CBS's standards, because CBS is the standard for total audience and stuff. So it wasn't doing great in the demo, but it was certainly, I think they were 10 million for their average audience, something like that. So that's pretty big. That's huge for CW.
I think it's bigger than any of the CW shows.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I buy that theory entirely, because I think that they definitely wanted to try it out. But I'd be shocked if in the back of their head they didn't say, look, if this doesn't work out, we can always just move it to CW. I'm not surprised that we talked about it the first time we talked about it.
So, yeah, exactly.
So here we are. Sleepy Hollow was renewed. Why? Castle knew what to do, which is, if you're going to get rid of one of your leads, you should just stop the show.
Uh-huh.
But Sleepy Hollow, or just at least, I don't know, just Hollow.
Hollow is what they should call it now. Yeah.
Will be back, or Sleepy. I don't know.
I do not understand that.
I wish them luck. I don't see how. I mean, they alienated. I would bet they alienated so many of their viewers that it's going to be instantly a uh, a regret.
The shit was kind of poisoned, you know, I don't know.
So no answers there. Hey, CBS is going to do something that I thought was really smart. You know, most of the new shows we'll talk about when you get a chance to see them in the fall, the ones that you watch or the ones that I watch because you make me, we'll talk about.
Right.
The news that CBS is doing a new version of MacGyver, I thought, well, that's brilliant because like Sherlock, or like, you know, Elementary, or Limitless, right? Mm-hmm. It is a clever spin, a little bit of a genre spin on a procedural. And ultimately, like, I think about MacGyver on CBS today, and I think, well, of course, I can imagine what that show is going to be.
Yeah.
And it could absolutely be as successful as Elementary is because it's, you know, they're taking that format of a guy who solves crimes in clever ways, right? It's another one of those.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense to them, and there's a whole generation has no idea what MacGyver is, so it's perfect.
Yeah, and they'll learn that you can take a paperclip and some gum and solve a crime. That's just how it is.
Yes, now we can. Now the when you say to somebody, well, through somewhere in the next fall, yeah, I totally MacGyvered that. They're gonna get it.
They'll finally get it.
Yeah.
And my last note about the news is you tried and tried and tried, but it turns out you can't kill Dr. Ken.
Nope, you cannot. Dr. Ken is unsinkable. It's unkillable. All the critics tried to do it. Dan wrote our review of it, and I think it's universally considered not good, but also popular. So, yeah. But that's not surprising either. So quality has no connection to ratings. But yeah, good for Dr. Ken. It's basically saying you guys don't matter. People still love us.
Yeah. In your face, critics.
Yeah, in your face, critics. We're just going to tell our stupid jokes over here.
Wow. Want to do some listener feedback?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
This is the first one from Dr. Ken.
In your face, it says.
In your face, Goodman.
No, this is a dean of the 707 travel update.
Okay.
They're in D.C. watching Veep.
It should be.
And Dean sent us a picture of Dean in front of, was it in front of the Washington Monument? Yeah, in front of the Washington Monument saying, I'm looking at the ballot options in the fall and thinking that a Selina Meyer administration might not be so bad.
Now, it would certainly be filthier and funnier. Yeah. I know that. Oh my God.
Filthier,
so
I don't know. Who could say?
Yeah, who could say, depending who gets in.
Lots of filthy options out there.
Woo!
Yeah.
Boy, it's so good this year, though, everybody. Hope you're watching Veep because it's so great.
We have some letters about your pronunciation.
Oh yes,
of Marseille.
Marseille,
which you said Marseille.
So I said Marseille, and I did. I wouldn't say I scolded you, but I corrected you. I'm like, no, Jason, it's not Marseille, it's Marseille. Yeah, I'm a dumbass. I'm never going to France again. I'm going to use this as my opportunity. Like I tweeted out, I need a French girlfriend. I need a French girlfriend or someone who's maybe not French but speaks French.
Mm. There's an existential French lady who lives on the side of Mount Tam who you could talk to.
That's tremendous.
Has anyone ever really been to Marseille? Marseille is more of a state of mind than a port city. So we heard from Olivier from the Plus 3-3. Where this is going.
Yes.
It says,
so bad.
Says, again, you pronounced it wrong, but as a French guy living in the U.S., I concur, so he's not actually in the Plus 3-3, but we're going to give him credit. The show is not good. And that's a stupid fake accent. The reason for Netflix to produce a French show is to comply with France's laws regarding cultural content. It was pitched as the French House of Cards.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wah, wah, or yeah. French equivalent of that. Possibly with an accordion. Another tweeter, Mayeski, I'm going to call this tweeter, said, if you want a good, very French, very scenic original TV series, try Witnesses on Netflix.
Right. I'm going to try that.
All right.
Like I saw that, that I think he tweeted that out as well.
Yeah. And our friend Yehuda wrote in to say, oh, the butchering of the word Marseille. Jason said it right. Then Tim proceeded to hurt the ears of Francophones the world over by pronouncing the second part like Versailles, which is how you pronounce Versailles. I realize fact-checking isn't high on the priority list of my favorite weekly podcast. Correct. That's correct. And then she offers a deal to be our pronunciation checker. I will say that we appreciate this, but at the same time, you know how this goes, which is that we've been offered fact-checking assistance from elsewhere too, and the problem is that would require preparation.
And we don't have preparation.
We don't do a lot of that. But I just want to point out that I was on a real losing streak there, and I finally got one right.
You got it right. And I took a huge, huge dive. It was a big fall for me.
Yeah.
Not that I had pronounced a lot of French words correctly, but that was really bad.
Yeah.
And I got handed it pretty good on Twitter. It was very funny. I'm trying to remember who the guy. The guy was like saying that he laughed because it was to hear it wrong and then to hear it 12 more times wrong. It was funny. I'm sorry, I forget his name right now, but he's a frequent frequently on Twitter and making comments. But I apologize to France. And yet I reiterate, girlfriend wanted. Let's fix it. Let's take lessons together.
Interesting. Wow. We're calling them all out here.
That's a throwback.
Hobo Eric is back. Back in the plus 4-4.
Is he making fun of me too?
No. This is good. For those who are listening simultaneously worldwide, we're recording this on May 13th, a Friday. And so this is important for you to listen to the words of Hobo Eric. Not a question, he says, but a clarion call. On Saturday, the most amazingly odd European tradition will be broadcast live. It'll be on Logo in the U.S. It's the finals of the Eurovision Song Contest. I implore you, your listeners, your listeners' families, etc., to watch it. Hundreds of millions of people watch it every year, host parties, debate its merits, discuss the political bloc voting. If you do not know the significance of nil point, that's in French there, by the next podcast, well, you should. 3 p.m. Eastern on Logo. This is the first time, I believe, that Eurovision has been broadcast on actual TV in the U.S. You could watch it on a stream before, but Logo picked it up and is going to actually show it live. And I've seen a few Eurovisions over the years. They are everything that I wished American Idol would be, but never was. They're bizarre. And as an American, you get to watch them and be like, I don't understand anything I'm seeing here. It's kind of delightful.
So, okay. Well, that sounds good. Maybe I'll tape that.
It's very
strange.
I should say,
instead of tape it. I will record that.
Put that on the DVR.
Putting that on the recorder.
So thank you, Hobo Eric, for the Eurovision alert.
Yes, and thank you, Jason, for taking the French on that one.
Yeah, nul point. Also, I should mention on theincomparable.com, this week's episode of the Unjustly Maligned podcast is about the Eurovision Song Contest.
Ooh, good.
So some little cross promotion.
Cross promotion,
absolutely.
If you want
to hear more about Eurovision, check out Rachel Donner talking to Anthony Johnston about Eurovision. Art from the 425 wrote in to say, regarding concerns over TVTM passing on factually challenged information, given the tone of this year's political discussion, I think we can all agree that fact-checking is no longer a thing anyway.
Not a thing.
I say you just say whatever you want, and if someone calls you on it, just revert to the classic, well, we will have to agree to disagree.
Or I could just say, well, that's not how we pronounce it here. I'm sorry, friends.
There you go. That's right. Art from the 425, thank you. John from the 415.
Yes,
there you go, the record. Saying Game of Thrones started in 2011. We're on season 6. At this point, can't we kill the direwolves and dragons are expensive theme as to why the show is limited to 10 episodes? We're down a couple of direwolves, and computing power is much cheaper than it was in season 1. So what do you think about that? What's the excuse du jour for why they can only do 10 hours of Game of Thrones a year?
It's I can tell you, honestly, it's never been the money. It's never been the money, because I always said that's asinine, and I continue to say that they won the Emmy last year, so they don't really care about me. Suck it, Goodman. I'm sure they said that.
They're there with Dr. Ken.
With Dr. Ken and together watching it. But it would improve the storytelling, because the compression of the storyline is my biggest complaint. And if you have 13 episodes, it breathes more, and you don't have to just say, ooh, here's a minute and 90 seconds, or here is just under 2 minutes with Bran, and then we're gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, or here's 36 seconds with Khaleesi. And then we don't see her again.
For 2 weeks.
And then it goes another, it inches along. It's so slow.
Entertainment Weekly's big piece this year on the show, it seemed to me they were switching from saying, oh, well, it's just too expensive. And I think they've been doing this for a little while. It's the logistics of it. They say they shoot it. They have this huge cast. They shoot in all these different locations internationally. And that this season, I think they had as many as 4 different units shooting simultaneously, which is just batty. That's wild. That's not like anything, you know. It's not like Mr. Robot that's shooting the whole season as a movie. It's like they're shooting, you know, 4 shows simultaneously and then taping them together. And so that's their perspective is they can't do more because they spend all year as it is doing this. My response would be, if you had more money, you could probably hire more people and you probably could do more. But apparently creatively, the producers have convinced HBO that this is their limit. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And again, I get the whole logistics scheduling thing. I'm sure that but it's also a very brilliant ruse of saying, well, look, we shoot in 4 different places in all these different countries with all these different casts and then different producers. And then all the directors have to get together. And then we have to have like the writers patch up things and everybody's busy. I'm pretty sure if you had a veteran producer or executive producer on the podcast today, he'd say, actually, you can fix that by doing this, right? So, but they are a little bit handcuffed that most of the stories are written by the same 2 guys, although it's a small staff, so it's more than just them, but they are busy overseeing the scripts and all that stuff. But I still think there's a way. If there's a will, there's a way. They could get 13. Yeah. I just believe it.
Yeah, and I do agree. As much as I like the show, and I think this season's been really good. I'll point out again that we do a weekly recap of it afterward. That I've been on the first few, and I'm not going to be on this weekend's, but we're doing one every week on the TV podcast on The Incomparable. It's more cross promotion here. Mm-hmm. I think this season's been really good, but it's still, you've got those moments where you're like, you know, that's it, right? And you know you're not going to see. You just got 3 minutes. 4 minutes with these characters, and if you're lucky, they'll be back next week for another 4 minutes.
But you know they're not coming back that episode, basically.
Yeah, unless it's the first 3 episodes, if it was at the wall, they bookended the episodes, right?
Yeah.
And so that was good. I was like, yeah, imagine if we got this much story in every storyline every time, but it's just impossible. And I think the show is way better when they have fewer storylines with more time per episode. Yeah. But when you only have 10 episodes, what can you do? You know? So
yeah, been a complaint since season 1, but it continues. But I love it. Like, I complain about it, and I do think it, the truncated, the story is, it's just too stuck. It's stuck in the mud. It can't
hard to get up to speed.
It can't breathe.
Yeah.
But I still love every episode that I watch. I gotta tell you that.
Yeah. So. I'm with you. All right. We got a couple more. David, from the +612, this is from Sydney, Australia,
our
release worldwide, said, Tim and Jason, first, thanks so much for the reminder of an obscure 80s local rock group and celebrating Australia's legendary Killer Fauna in episode 81. That's the Drop Bears. I'm conflicted about whether to revisit the early seasons of The Americans, given that Tim loves the show. It failed here on launch despite a massive promotional campaign. I watched the first 2 or 3 episodes but couldn't get over the FBI agent moving in across the street. The show was quickly dumped in Australia from a primetime spot, rapidly moved to a secondary digital channel of the network who bought it. Season 2 and 3 were moved to another free-to-air network and appeared on iTunes only this year, and season 4 is just being shown on cable. It's a very confusing history. I've only seen the first 5 episodes of season 1 of The Americans, and you know, I'm already at the point where I will say I endorse it. I think it's worth going back and watching it, because I'm loving it now that I gave it a little more time, knowing how much people like Tim rave about it, and knowing that if I get to season 4, it's going to be even better.
Yeah, and I'm not giving anything away, but when I did the piece that we're linking to about for the Academy and Television Academy Emmy people, it's the great part about season 4 is all the stuff. They never lost track of the fact that the storylines that they planted in the first season are going to at some point come to fruition. It's a long con.
Yeah,
and there was plenty of drama in the preceding years, but it's really. it's really gurgling up right now, I should say. It's really, really intense.
The richness of it. So I watched the first five in a binge, and then I've been watching them again with my wife because I'm like, you got to see the show. We got to watch this show together. The thing that I was talking to her about is, it just, the richness of it blows me away. The fact that it actually pushes a lot of the same buttons as a sci-fi series, a genre series would, mm-hmm. in the sense that there's a lot of allegory going on here. I mean, on one level, The Americans is about the complexities of a relationship and, mm-hmm. and of a marriage and of a family and intertwined connections that you've got with your extended family. And you could say, yeah, you know, they're spy relationships and they're handlers. And I mean, there's so much richness in that. And their relationship is so complex. And it starts complex rather than sort of starting simple and then becoming complex, as so many
right.
traditional kind of stories about a relationship do. And that blows me away every time I watch. I'm like, there's so many layers of what they're doing here. It's just playing at a really high level. So I couldn't be more impressed with it.
Yeah, it really is. So yeah, keep watching. Yeah, sorry about that.
It's hard to find in Australia, but you should check it out.
Watch out for the drop bears.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted to me that the drop bears were not. It was a myth.
Yeah, it's not. They're not real.
They're not real.
No,
it's crazy. It's no, like they're, keep they're, people
they're,
away.
They're used to scare gullible Americans. Like
yeah,
you.
It's this. Yeah, I totally. I'm not going over there because I still think they exist.
No,
I think it's a double. It's like a double.
It's a double
thing.
Bluff.
It's a double bluff. They really are. They really are drop bears. And by the way, if they're not drop bears, there's still those big freaking lizards that climb on the side of your house. I have seen those.
All right.
And all the stuff that can kill you in the water. Mm-hmm. And the spiders, not going over there. Not happening.
A friend of mine in Australia said, no, it's really overstated. And wild animals haven't killed anybody in Australia for, you know, a couple of years now. So.
Okay.
Australia.
Yeah, I gotcha. Wink, wink, Australia.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you over there, and then you're poisoned. Okay, we have one last segment before we go, unless you Columbo me at some point.
No, I have no Columbo material.
Okay, good. This is we're going to close out with Not a Thing.
Yes.
Where we discuss some other things that aren't things. I have a series of tweets from somebody, but before I get to that, I want to bring my own Not a Thing, which is, I linked to this on Twitter, I'll put it in the show notes. There's a video that Miles McNutt made at Slate this week, which is about it's the Empty Cup Awards, mm-hmm. raising awareness of an important TV issue that we have mentioned on the show before, which is people carrying around empty coffee cups and gesturing wildly with them and pretending they can still drink out of them. And, you know, what we proposed, I believe, on this podcast was maybe like a little beanbag or something down at the mm-hmm. bottom just to give them some weight, because the actors gesture wildly with them and it's very clear there's nothing in there. And I get you might not want to drink it and put some real coffee in there, and you might not want to have liquid because it'll splash over everything and that could be bad, but something. And it's a great video that made me laugh out loud at many points. And yes, Supergirl is such an offender because we have so many scenes of her bringing Cat Grant coffee and Calista Flockhart and what's her name, the woman who plays Supergirl now, I can't remember and I'm blanking on it, but anyway, they gesture wildly with
that was my French
so-called full coffee cups. So check out that video.
Yeah. And Miles has been obsessed with this for a long time.
Oh yeah. No, he cops to it. He's like, this is a thing. But he's right. It is, and once you see it, it's very hard not to see it after that.
Yeah, it's his pet peeve that he's taking.
And they're so good at pretending that they're drinking things and so bad at pretending that those things have any weight. It's just baffling to me.
Yeah.
So the last Not a Thing installment from Shiny Failure on Twitter. Great name.
Yes.
He says, I got a good Not a Thing for you. Horses making noise, whinnying, neighing, etc. My wife works with horses and it distracts her to the point that she has to distract me. Her theory is sound editors don't think we'll believe it's a horse if it's not constantly making horse noises.
I love this.
It's like, I know it looks like a horse, but is it a horse?
Yuck, yes,
it is. It is. It totally is.
I love that.
And they're largely silent animals. This is true. I grew up with horses.
Except on television. It's like, God, all that whinnying.
Yeah.
Stop your whinnying.
They don't do that. That's not a thing. So there you go. Not a thing. Horses making lots of noise.
We are discovering experts all across the world.
In so many fields.
Experts and their spouses are experts. Mm-hmm. It's like Foley people. They're like, it's pretty good.
That's the kind of demographic we have here at the TV Talk Machine.
Upscale and educated.
Yeah.
We will sell you movies and razors, whatever you want, because you're smart people.
Yeah, exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this week, razors, but next week, who knows what it could be. It could be underpants. Woo-hoo! It could be something else.
Did you just say underpants again? You did.
I did.
You did. You just can't for that one
person, just for that one person who doesn't want to hear about the underpants. All right. I think that's it. I think we've reached the end.
Excellent. Well, I'm not going to Columbo you with another not a thing. I want to give a golf clap to our listeners and their pet peeves. It's very good.
Thanks to everybody out there. I guess I'll do the numbers. You can reach us facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. You can tweet to us @TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. Of course, you can find all of Tim's stuff at The Hollywood Reporter, THR.com, and we'll have links to his pieces in the show notes, which you can get at TheIncomparable.com/TVTM/82. All right, Tim, have a good weekend. I'll see you next week.
Okay, see you then.
Bye, everybody.